try to stay optimistic because like it's all a mind game. But yeah, there was a moment where I was like, oh my God, I put all my money on the wrong card, you know? Like, and I'm like 22, didn't go to college, got like 450 euros in my pocket, you know, back at home in rainy Germany.
Das ist der Telekom Electronic Beats Podcast, der Podcast rund um Nachtleben und Clubkultur.
Wir sprechen mit DJs, Türstehern, Tänzern, Clubbetreibern und anderen Nachtmenschen.
Mein Name ist Gesine Kühne.
Und ich bin Jakob Töne.
Herzlich willkommen beim Electronic Beats Podcast.
Hello and welcome to a different kind of podcast episode today. The last 15 months haven't been easy for most of us. After all, our lives have changed tremendously. While it feels like my generation may not have been as badly affected in terms of our health, the same cannot be said for our professional lives. Education and work have fundamentally changed as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Many are wondering what the future has in store for them. How is the world of work developing and what kind of career suits me? Enter Project Futureproof, a European initiative launched by Deutsche Telekom, aimed at giving those of us more confidence in our careers and showing us new pathways despite the current situation. Equipped with a new Future Feed app, you can hopefully find answers to these questions. After all, there are also many different kinds of creative professions out there, and that's what today's episode is all about. I've dialed up three young people who have vastly different creative careers. They told me how they turned their passion into profession, how they dealt with setbacks, and how they started their creative journey. Punk Zack is a 22-year-old fashion designer from Cologne who launched his own clothing brand called Colors in 2018. Since then, he has already presented two collections at Arise Fashion Week in Lagos, Nigeria. But when COVID-19 hit last year, he missed out on an extremely important job opportunity in Paris. But more on that in a moment.
I'm like in Paris, I'm like living my life, and all of a sudden I finish work at 7:30, I gotta be home by 8 o'clock because it's a lockdown. I was like, what the fuck is this? I mean, so that kind of sucked. And then a month later or so, they quit my contract and I lost my job in Paris. And I was like a kick in the nuts because I was like, fuck, I worked for the last 3 years. I worked so hard to get to Paris, you know?
I also spoke to Katie Menzies, who's from the UK. Katie is a 27-year-old illustrator, character designer, and on the current Forbes 30 Under 30 list of Europe. She now lives in Barcelona, where she co-founded Cabeza Patata, a creative studio with a focus on character design. So she's also responsible for the lovely character designs you'll find in the Future Feed app. Her career is super exciting, especially since she didn't study illustration straight away.
When I was 17, 18, I didn't really feel empowered to go and apply to an art school and pursue art in that way. I was maybe a little bit more shy about it. I saw it a lot more as a hobby, and as well from the context, I don't know anyone that does illustration or design, so I just didn't really see it as a viable career.
BBC youngest star Jaguar Bingham records being shy in the past as well. You wouldn't notice that today, though. Jaguar is a presenter on BBC Radio 1, a DJ and a journalist who lives in London. When she was asked to think about a professional future at school a few years ago, she kind of felt lost. A career in the music business was not really an option back then. I wanted to hear from her how she made her way in the music industry anyway, and what it feels like to have your own show on BBC Radio 1 at the age of 26. Hi, Jaguar. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's crazy because you made huge steps the last years and you're now a popular broadcaster, presenter with your own show on BBC Radio 1 and mm-hmm. You're DJing and writing. When did you know that you wanted to do all these things for a living?
Wow. I mean, I didn't really realize what was possible. And I didn't really realize that jobs in music and media like this existed till I was about 18 when I went to uni. I went to uni in Leeds in the north of England and just had the best time, like just fully got involved in like the house and techno scene, like out every weekend at like some great clubs and just I had the best time. And I kind of got into the music industry professionally by doing student radio and just because I thought it might be quite fun to have my own radio show. I did a Friday night show called Dangerous Jag, and I just played like, yeah, just loads of like, I played a lot of house, I played a lot of like bassy stuff, and I kind of channeled my love of music through that and got really into like writing scripts for the show and making the playlists. So that was like my first taste when I was, yeah, about 18. And then the way I got into the actual industry was I applied for an internship at Radio One and One Extra when I was 19. So that was like the summer of my first year at uni. And I spent 2 months, like moved to London, worked on Annie Mac's show, worked on like loads of different shows and got into it that way.
Did you realize when you were having your show at your university that this could be a job or like a permanently thing?
Yeah, I think early on it was literally just for fun. And then I've been doing it for like 6 months and I was like, I love this. Like I spend so much time like doing this show for my like three listeners, probably one of them being my mum. And then so I kind of did think like this is amazing. And I then learned more and more about the industry. And then this internship came up and the station manager was like, you know, this is a big opportunity, let everyone apply. But I never thought I would get the internship. So it was a very unexpected opportunity, which I just seized with both hands.
You were saying that you just realized opportunities in the music industry when you were 18 and obviously leaving school. But in school, was there any way that you can think of that could lead you in a creative direction or so? I've read that you were filling out these career surveys and that you wanted to help people and they told you to become a doctor or a teacher.
Yeah, you know, when you're at school and they're like trying to help you like decide what you want to be, and they're all quite traditional jobs, aren't they? Like doctor, teacher, etc. And yeah, I do remember saying how I wanted to help people. And those are the jobs that came up, doctor, teacher, nurse. And I was kind of like, oh, I don't really want to do that. And then I thought, and I ended up doing an English degree and I thought maybe I could be a journalist, but I didn't think like music journalist because I feel like at school they don't really want to tell you about the creative jobs. They kind of want you to go down the very traditional route. And, you know, I'm a creative person, but I'm not like a musician necessarily, or I'm not like an actor. So it's like, I feel like my creativity wasn't very encouraged in that sort of way. So I was lucky that I went to uni and had the opportunity to explore it through radio.
It's crazy to see because, I mean, we're kind of at the same age. My parents are both musicians, so I got the chance to learn the opportunities in the music industry from a very early age. But then I've read that you're from the Channel Islands, and I can imagine it's like 4,000 or 2,000 people living there.
Yeah, 2,000 where I'm from. Tiny little rock.
Yeah, and I can imagine that your neighbor wasn't the program director of BBC, for example, or a crazy jazz musician who plays the world or so. So it was very interesting to see that your passion, and as you told me just a few seconds ago, that your passion just started up and you were into playlisting and curating and telling people about crazy good music. But this just came up at your age of 18. That was very interesting for me to see.
Yeah, I think, well, like my passion for music and love of music has always been there. Like, I remember, as a kid, I'd always ask for like CDs and iTunes gift cards. And I remember the day I got my iPod when I was like 10. And I was just obsessed with like downloading all this music. I'd have an older brother as well, so I'd always get all his music. And I was listening to all sorts when I was a kid. Like, and I think with dance music, you know, just, again, I was just listening to what my brother was listening to. So I'd listen to a lot of Chemical Brothers and like Fatboy Slim and like Naughty's House. And as well as like pop stuff, like Beyonce and Destiny's Child and Black Eyed Peas and Gwen Stefani. That was like, you know, I love everything. And then in the Channel Islands, although it's very small, we do have, we've got lots of German bunkers from World War II when it was occupied during World War II. So we have these raves every summer in these bunkers. So I remember being 14 and I like snuck out with my friend to this bunker. And obviously, because it's such a small island, my dad was like, did you go out last night? Like, my friend, were you down at the bunker party? I was like, oh, no, it wasn't me. Obviously, he's like, well, it was you, because who else would it have been? But so from an early age, I've really had that connection with like going out and hearing loud music and DJs and stuff, but it didn't kind of resonate with me and make sense till I was about 18.
But did you, getting back to the career point at school, did you ever feel lost at some point that maybe some people are really being triggered by such a recommendation by the teachers to become a teacher or a doctor, for example, and you were like, nah, I don't really follow this?
Yeah, I think I was always kind of like, I'll be okay because I'll figure it out. I wasn't too like stressed about not knowing what I wanted to do. But I think, I mean, I've been through when I was like really young, I was like, I want to be an astronaut. Then I was like, I want to be a zoologist. And then all sorts of ideas. But then I did really enjoy English. And I used to write a lot. Like I had a blog, I had a diary, I'd write like stories and poems and stuff. So like, early on, I thought, maybe I'll write books or maybe I'll be a journalist. So that was kind of my creative way. So I think I probably would have gone down that kind of route if I hadn't found music necessarily, maybe just like a news journalist or something. But I wasn't too stressed.
You said you were going then for the language and going as a writer could be a path for you. Now, as a moderator or a broadcaster, how important was your degree program for what you're doing now?
Yeah, so important. I actually, if I could talk to like 18-year-old me, I kind of started the course and I was like, yeah, this is fun. Then I discovered going out and I discovered radio and I kind of just like didn't really care about my degree. And at one point I wanted to drop out and just try and get a job into radio like as soon as possible. I'm glad I didn't, obviously. But now I do appreciate, because English literature is like, it's communication, it's writing, it's also being creative, it's analyzing, it's so many skills that I have actually learned from my degree. And, you know, even just knowing a lot of words, because I've had to write a lot of essays, it's been really helpful. I think it was definitely the right degree for me, for sure.
You moved to London after your university in Leeds, and I mean, you were still young at that point. Mm-hmm. And how was it then to start your career? Was it clear that you wanted to, go to BBC and apply for a host, or what was your plan back then?
So it's been quite a journey. So I moved to London about 4.5 years ago, I think. So I was 21. Yeah. And the reason I moved to London at that point is because I already had a job with the BBC. So when I was at uni, I did that internship, realized that I was obsessed with radio and had to work at the BBC. So then luckily a year later, a job at BBC Introducing came up, and Introducing is the BBC's platform to support new music. We've got radio shows all over the UK, Scotland, London, Leeds, Manchester, everywhere. So I worked on the show in Sheffield when I was in Leeds at uni. I ended up getting a 5-day-a-week job in London because they liked me and they said, come work with us in London. Originally, they said it was for 3 months. So like by April, we can't keep you. You need to find another job. But then I'm still there now, to be honest. Like I'm still part of the music team with Introducing, and that's very much like helping new artists across the whole platform. It's very multi-genre. We do obviously a lot of festivals when it's not a pandemic, and we have the Introducing stages. So I'd get to go to like Glastonbury and all these different festivals and help out. So that was kind of my base, the Introducing job. And I always noticed that we weren't really serving the dance community very well. And obviously that was an area that I was very passionate about. And when I moved down to London, first thing I said is like, we really need to work on getting producers and DJs in, because it just wasn't really a genre that was supported. It was a lot of guitar bands and stuff like that. So the show that I now do now, Introducing Dance, was kind of that's what we were aiming for. And Radio 1 eventually were like, okay, here's your shot. So last April, they gave me Introducing Dance, and I was actually able to find a place for all these amazing tracks and producers I was finding on BBC Introducing.
Great. Jaguar is my age and has her own radio show for a year now. Her show is currently on Sunday evening, and from September on, it will move to the Thursday 10 p.m. slot. So kind of prime time. She also tells us about some of the setbacks she faced in the past later on the podcast.
My next guest was able to turn his passion into a job as well. Zach Ali Murray comes from a family in which art and design have always played an important role. His mother is an art and fashion collector. His father is a creative director. Zach graduated from high school in 2017, and just 1 year later, he presented his fashion brand Colors. At the time, he was only 19 years old.
Welcome, Zach, to the podcast. And hello to New York City.
We appreciate it. First podcast.
You come from a very fashion and design loving family. When was it clear to you that you want to have your own fashion brand?
It was pretty apparent to me that I wanted to have my own brand when I was in the last year of school and like the last half a year. And the teacher asked everyone like, yo, what you want to do? Like, you know, which school you want to go to after school? Like, which college you want to go to? Which university? And I was like the last one in the line. And everyone was like, oh, I want to go here and I want to go there and I want to do engineering and blah, blah, blah. And then it was my turn. And then the teacher asked me, I was like, well, do you want to go to college? And I said, yeah, I don't want to go to college. I don't want to go to university. And he's like, yeah, but you have to. And I was like, I don't have to do anything. Like, I have to pass my exam and then, you know, see you never. And they're like, well, what are you going to do? And I was like, well, pff, I'm going to open up my own brand, you know? And they were like, oh, really? And I was like, oh, yeah. And it's like, mm.
So was it more spontaneous in that right moment?
Yeah, it was like, I always thought about it, but I never said it out loud. And in that moment when they were like, oh, what are you going to do? And I was like, well, I'm going to open up my own brand, you know? And then I was like, well, okay, well, there's no backing out now, you know? And then I did it. Yeah. And then I finished school and then did like maybe like 1.5 weeks of partying. And then I got kind of bored. And then I just sat down and I started working on some stuff. And that's when I wanted to do it. Yeah.
How did your family and friends react at that point? Did they support you?
I didn't tell anyone. I didn't tell anyone apart from my parents. I was like working on some ideas. And they were like, yo, what are you doing? And I was like, yeah, I was just thinking about some stuff. I want to open up my own brand. And then I planned it for like half a year. And then all my friends were like, yo, where are you? And I'm like, oh, I'm working. It's like, oh, where do you work? It's like, yeah, I worked these really weird shifts at the airport, you know, you know, something like that. They're like, oh, really? Okay, interesting. And then like a year later, I released the brand and everyone was like, yeah, we knew you were working on it. You should have just said it. And I was like, yeah, whatever, you know. So that's
then they were about. Pretty happy that you did so.
Yeah, yeah, they were pretty psyched. Yeah, they were pretty excited because everyone was always like complimenting me on like my choice of clothing. And I was like, I would always style like my girlfriends and my friends and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And everyone always asked me like, yo, Zach, put a quick outfit together for me. And I did that always. And I always thought to myself like, yeah, okay, you know, I just do my own brand, you know, because like I could never find the clothing that I thought was super fresh. I would go in a store and I would be like, yeah, this is okay. But like, is it really worth $600? You know, like, you know, and then I would just make my own variations and then I would make my own brand. And yeah, that's how it came about. At the beginning, I didn't even sell anything. I just did it for myself.
Did you have any doubts at that time? Like also starting a brand is like it comes with a financial invest and also invest of time and dedication.
No, I didn't have any doubts because like it's kind of funny. Like I got this one woman from the school of Antwerp. She saw my stuff on Instagram or whatever. And she was like, yo, I'm in Cologne. I really want to meet you and blah, 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 blah. I think we could maybe offer a scholarship and all that stuff. And I was like, yeah, okay, sure, whatever. Let's meet up. And then I went with my parents and my dad, pretty calm guy, you know, it's pretty chill. We went to the meeting and I presented them my clothing. And then they asked me, they were like, we love it. We really want to give you a scholarship for Antwerp. What do you say? And I said, no, thank you. You know, with the kind regard, like, no, thank you. It's just not in my interest to go to college right now. And then I looked to my right and my dad, who's always like super calm, he was just like, I could see the anger in his eyes. he was just like, what the fuck, you know? And then with all due respect, like, I really appreciate the offer, but it's just currently not in my plan for myself. You know, to go.
Yeah, for the people who don't know, the school of Antwerp, the school of Antwerp is pretty like one of the most important fashion schools in Europe, maybe the most important.
Yeah, I've always wanted to go because I was such a fan of Magella. I was like, yo, I want to go to Antwerp. And then someone offered me and I was like, do I really want to go? And then in the car ride home, my dad was so upset. He was like shouting at me, like, what the fuck are you throwing this back in their face? And I was like, oh my God, did I make a mistake now? And then I made a deal with him, like the day after when he calmed down. I made a deal with him and I was like, he said, I give you 1 year time. And in that 1 year, you can do everything apart from nothing, you know? But you better make it work. If it's not working, like, I'm just going to send you to any school. And I was like, oh, fuck, okay. And then, so I never had doubt because, like, there was just no other option, you know? Because there was just no way I was going to go to another school that I really didn't want it. So for my motivation, I was working for not going to school again. That was like how I had it.
Zach's brand slogan is Colors is an Attitude by Punk Zach, as that's how he calls himself in the fashion world. I asked him why and what's behind the name.
The name Punk Zach was pretty funny. It was pretty relieving, you know, because before that, I went to a different school and I never really belonged to anything, but I also wasn't not belonging to something, you know? Because like, it was always weird because growing up in Germany, you know, and I had like a black mom and a white dad, and I had kind of like light skin but curly hair, and I spoke better English than I spoke German, and it was just like, I sucked at football but was really good at drawing, you know? And it was like really weird because like all those macho kids in my school were like, dude.
Not really fitting into stigmas, yeah.
Yeah, I was always too black to be white, but too white to be black in that sense. And I was like, you know, and then again, like I spoke English at home and all that kind of stuff. And it was just too much to handle for like 15-year-old kids, you know, going to school in the suburbs in Germany, you know, like in a forest, you know, like it was just too much to handle for them. And then they always were like kind of like teasing me a little bit, you know, because I always read super crap. Like in school, like reading was always super bad. And then all that kind of stuff. And then I remember like one day, because Instagram came along and I made Instagram and I was like, okay, you know, I tried out different names. And then one day I was like, because I was super into Sex Pistols at one point, you know, in this whole skinhead phase. And then I was like, I'm just going to call myself Punk Zach, you know. And then I did that. And then I kind of got really deep into this whole punk philosophy, you know, with the like anarchy in the UK and, you know, going against the system and all that kind of stuff. And then at one time, I remember it was super crazy. I was standing somewhere and this one guy came up to me and made like a really weird comment. And he was like, I don't remember what he said, but I remember I just answered with fuck you. You know what I mean? And just walked away. And I was like, and I had never done that before. And I thought to myself,
that's Punk's egg.
This is pretty, yeah, it's pretty yeah. Freeing because like, you know, you could say something, it would just bounce right off. And then that's when the whole thing came about. And then like a year or two later, I was so deep into it that it was like kind of just normal, you know, that when someone said something towards me, which I didn't like, it was like no one ever said anything, you know? And the slogan, it's an attitude, came from, when I was younger, I was like super into Z-Boys from California, the ones that started the skating in the pool, like Tony Alva and Jay Adams. Stacy Peralta, like all those guys, I was like super into that kind of stuff, like skate surfing. And I remember like there was this interview with Tony Alva and he said like, yo, Jay Adams, he would never land the tricks, but he would always try like the craziest stuff. But it didn't matter because it was just for the attitude, you know? And I thought to myself, oh my God, that's so awesome. Like, you know, because I skate, you know, and then like you want to land the tricks, but I now have so many friends, we just try the craziest stuff. And even if we don't land it, at least we look good whilst we're doing it.
It always looks good trying the craziest shit. Yeah. I remember.
Yeah. So that's the attitude, you know? And then I thought to myself, you know, I'm going to make a brand which doesn't sell clothing because fuck it, you know, if I want to sell it, I'll sell it. If I don't, I don't, because that's the attitude.
That's a good point actually. Cause I was then looking for retailers or shops where I could possibly buy your stuff. And I realized it's only possible via Instagram direct message.
Yeah, direct message. But we have a store in Paris. It's pretty awesome. We used to have like lots of pop-up stores. Like I had one in Hamburg, two in Berlin, one in Cologne. That was pretty good. And after I did my last show, this one store in Paris gave me a text on Instagram. It said like, hey, we really love your stuff. We want to have it for our store. And I was like, oh, what a coincidence, because I'm literally in Paris tomorrow, you know? And then I packed my stuff with me, took it to the store, and I just showed up. And I was like, bro, well, this is the collection. Check it out. And they loved it. And they're like, yeah, we'll take this, 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 and this, and that. Yeah, and then, you know, they paid me, and I made the clothing, and we made it, and it's now in Paris.
It's really great that Zach has developed such self-confidence and that it was clear to him so early on what he wanted to do. That wasn't so clear to me during my school days, to be honest. It took a little longer for me, and that was even before the pandemic happened. My next guest felt the same way. Katie Menzies is currently one of the most exciting character designers in Europe. Only 3 years ago, she founded the studio Cabeza Patata in Barcelona with her partner Abel Reverta. She has worked on campaigns for Spotify, Apple, Google, and the New York Times, and many more. Her happy characters also appear in the Project Futureproof app. There's also a video with her where she gives an insight into her working world. As a fashion lover, she creates an individual outfit for each of her characters, giving them a real personality. Her career up to now took a few years, and it's a perfect example of the fact that there's no right way to find the perfect job. Hi, Katie.
Hi, nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
How did you get into character design? It's very specific.
It is very specific for sure, but it's something that I definitely never knew that there was a career within it, but I always wanted to pursue it, if that makes sense. So I always really liked, ever since I was little, I always really enjoyed making dolls or toys. Then when I grew up, that got a little bit more advanced. I explored with different crafts and illustration and just building on what was really a hobby and an interest for me. I joined together with my partner, Abel, who is someone who also always loved characters, and we shared that love together and started making something just for a bit of fun, really. And it ended up turning into our studio and our whole career and kind of our whole life now.
How did you manage to starting with a hobby and then make it your profession in the end?
Well, I actually had a bit of an unusual path into design. So I studied in university for my first degree. I studied French and politics. So completely different thing.
That was really surprising when I read that.
Yeah, so that was a very different path, but I think that it did help a lot in certain ways of seeing and understanding the world, and in ways of as well being able to organize my thoughts and analyze things then actually is really applicable to design in the end, at least the way that I approach it. So as I was studying that, I was carrying on all the time drawing things and making things, and I always enjoyed doing that. So I had a nice portfolio to apply to a design school in Barcelona when I finished university in England. So I went there 4 years ago to do a master's in illustration. And that was where I just started discovering a style and really letting loose and enjoying. And from there, I studied for a year. And then Abel and I joined together to make our studio in this kind of natural way I was telling you. We just started working together a bit for fun. And yeah, from there, we've just been working together and enjoying.
Katie did her master's in illustration in Barcelona, so not in London. The change of location has given her new freedom.
I think that probably I decided to go and do it in Barcelona because I was a bit worried about my environment from my old friends or my family wondering a bit what I was doing, or I might feel a bit inhibited coming and doing illustrations at home in front of everyone, or having an exhibition and having people who I'd known forever coming and feeling a bit embarrassed about it. So I thought, I know, I'll just get really far away to do it. And I think that that kind of worked out as well. I think being away from that context and being in a new place where I didn't know anyone, in a new design school there, I was able to just completely do my thing.
Was there a certain reason why you moved from the one topic, which is there are similarities, but very a few, I'd say, between politics and French and illustration. But was there a certain reason why you jumped and feel empowered to turn your creativity into your profession?
I guess that word empowered is a bit what it is. Probably when I was 17, 18, I didn't really feel empowered to go and apply to an art school and pursue art in that way. I was maybe a little bit more shy about it. I saw it a lot more as a hobby, and as well from the context, I don't know anyone that does illustration or design, so I just didn't really see it as a viable career. Whereas going to university and studying subjects that I really enjoyed, French and politics, I thought that would be good and fun, and it was. And then towards the end of it, I thought, actually, there's this thing that I've always really wanted to do. And now I'd met my partner Abel since in London, and he was already working as a designer, and I met a lot of people, and I thought, hey, actually, I really want that job. So I thought after university, the best way to pursue that would be to go and study formally and properly go for it.
But back in school, you've mentioned that you didn't feel empowered by the age of 17, 18. Back then, you're in high school. Mm-hmm. Didn't you see the opportunity to get into creative or in a creative study? Or was there a lack of information, or was the reason?
Yeah, it's a little complicated. The school system in the UK is that you decide your subjects from when you're 15. When I was 15, I stopped doing art because I think I was just a little bit shy and I thought, oh, maybe it's not for me. And I remember my art teacher saying, oh, that's a shame. And I thought, that actually really is a shame. And then once you leave it at 15, you can't pick it back up again because then you narrow down and you only do 4 subjects and then 3 subjects. And before you know it, you don't have the proper portfolio or exams to go and apply to art school, or the confidence or sense of empowerment as well, because you haven't been learning it. So if you leave it there, then you can't really pick it up again. So that's why you have to work a little bit harder to get everything together. And you do need to feel a bit more empowered later, I feel. So, but luckily I could pick it back up and went for it. And I think I'd learned a lot more in the meantime as well. At that time in school, there wasn't really that mentor enough to realize I could take that path. So I guess that's why I left the path and went on a different one and have mentors in many different subjects. So I thought, oh, actually, yeah, I would like to pursue that. And then towards the end of university, as I say, it was just meeting more people that worked in the industry. I'd went and did a summer course in design as well. And I did various courses in different schools around London that were just during my university holidays. And that's where I met more people and started to realize that you can make a career out of this.
I'm now in my mid-20s. And when I look back, I took also a very strange path as I decided to work first after school to just to find out where I belong, or like where I'm going to study or what I'm going to study. I'm working in the live music industry, which is kind of narrowed down to the minimum or to nothing at the moment. Mm-hmm. But also for my generation in the post-pandemic or present pandemic world, there are many uncertainties my generation is facing now, culturally, socially, economically. Mm. Also, a recent research by Deutsche Telekom showed that 61% of the European Gen Z are anxious about the future job. How do you feel about this? Can you imagine what it feels like? And did you also had same thoughts when you were maybe after school or studying that you were not really sure about what's going to happen?
Yeah, I'm not surprised that many young people are feeling anxious about the future. I think that's completely natural now more than ever, of course, with the pandemic. But definitely at the same time when I was leaving school, I was also felt quite anxious about the future. I'm also somebody who wants to have things quite organized. I like a bit of certainty. I like to have a plan. And obviously, sometimes when you are leaving school, or if you go to university, when you leave university, you don't really know what that plan is going to be. And it changes quite rapidly. And it changes as well, of course, depending on who you meet and what opportunities you might have. And you need to be a bit ready for that. But certainly now with the pandemic, I think it's been very difficult for many people. And definitely with the live music industry, obviously, is a bit boring now. But I do feel positive that things are going to bounce back as soon as we can have things under control. We've been talking about the vaccine rollout. When things can get back to normal, I think people are really ready for them to get completely back to normal. And I definitely feel a lot of more hope and positivity in the air, at least where I am right now in London. I think people are kind of ready to to have a nice summer, however that can be, however we can make it happen.
One reason why we are also talking today is that you're taking a part of in the Future Proof campaign, which is running now. And I wanted to know, like, what was your motivation to participate?
It's a really cool campaign, actually. So we have created 16 characters representing different personality types. And it's a really cool idea because you're representing the idea is you're taking a questionnaire, and then at the end of the questionnaire, you can see what your personality type is. And then based off of that, get some advice for different areas or some different kind of articles to read and things you want to understand. And it's just cool to work on something that's so broad like this, but also so specific.
Where do you see the most benefits on the web app?
I think it's just that. I think it's being able to maybe put into words something that you kind of feel yourself. So if you answer some questions and you sort of think, oh yeah, I think I'm a bit like this, but I don't really know. And it might expose something that you hadn't really noticed about yourself. And it might come up saying, oh, actually, you might be interested in this type of job, or you might be interested to hear an interview from this person. And you might see something that you hadn't seen before and then get a bit inspired or have a bit of an idea to do something. I think what I was telling you earlier about not really knowing how to join the creative industry until I had met some people in the creative industry, I think in the same way, this app is kind of bringing that to you a bit. So you can see something that you might not have seen. You might see an interview from someone who has a job you never even knew existed and be like, huh, I'd like to do that.
So could it somehow replace the mentor role, in your opinion?
I guess it could in a way, yeah. Or I guess at least work alongside in a very helpful way and get you started to go and try and find something else in that career. Because sometimes, I don't know, definitely in school, I didn't really know how many careers were out there. I was like, okay, you can be a doctor, you can be a teacher, you know, the storybook career roles. And then actually there's so many things out there that you just need to learn about. I remember doing a test in school that was like a very, very basic version of this. So we kind of, you had to tick a lot of boxes and then they tell you at the end, oh, this could be the job that you go into, all just on a pen and paper. And then they printed out the result and gave it to you. But this is so fun because it's within an app and then it has fun character designs and then it has some videos and has some web links. And so it's such a more interactive experience that I remember getting that piece of paper and being like, oh, I don't know, I'm not really interested in this job and putting it away. Whereas with this, it's, you can check out a lot more about something. And then if you're not really sure, you can go back and check something else. It's not so definitive as well.
Even if our three guests are currently able to do their dream job, they have all experienced setbacks in the past. Take Jagra, for example. Even though she knew since she was 18 that she wanted to make radio, this pursuit wasn't always taken seriously by her peers. She always had to prove to those around her that she was good enough.
I've really been working hard. I've been saying to everyone for the last like 7 years how I'm going to have this show on Radio 1, like this is what I'm working to. And at the, you know, at the start, people were obviously like, who's this girl? What is she on about? Like, what? And then over time, it's like people really believed what I was saying because I was like, I'm not giving up. I think after a few years, they were like, oh, she's still after. Okay, fair.
She's not kidding, okay.
No, I was never kidding. I'm very, a very determined person. So a lot of hard work, you know, a lot of blood, sweat and tears has gone into this. And the biggest challenge for me, I think, was moving to London, you know, really young and ambitious. And like, you expect the world, don't you, when you're like 21 and you just think you're just going to get something just like that. But I did understand I had to work for it. But basically after that Radio 1, we're like, oh, come in and, you know, get in the studios, do some pilot shows. We'll see how you sound. And that was huge for me. And I was just so overwhelmed and excited, but obviously really nervous as well. And, you know, I did a few months with a producer, just working on like some dance shows, and I wasn't really sure what it was for. They didn't really give me much information. And I kind of got my hopes up being like, well, I'm doing this. This means I'm going to have a show in a few months on Radio 1, you know. And it didn't, of course, it didn't just happen like that. Like I did these shows. I think I was obviously not ready and they were just trying me out. And when nothing happened, I was just really disappointed. And I've really doubted myself because I was like, and I was just being impatient, really. I was like, why has nothing come of this? Like, am I not very good? Do I not know enough? And then there were people who said to me, like, you know, I don't think you're ready, or maybe have you tried this radio station? Or, you know, people always suggest different things or want to pull you in different directions. But I got myself together and I was like, right, I know what I want. I'm just going to now work on, you know, really getting to know the scene, getting to know myself, get some more broadcast experience, because you can't just turn up and be on the BBC. Like, you need to find your voice. So I ended up doing a show on Represent Radio, which is a community station in South London, for 2.5 years, which was amazing. I loved that. And yeah, I started DJing a lot more. I was working for Mix Mag as well. Started there as an intern as well. And I just really branched out and just did it in a really organic way and just really enjoyed the journey. And after a while, I managed to kind of get my confidence back and, you know, channel it into the bigger picture, which was, yes, I want to be on Radio 1. But you know, I want to establish myself as a DJ. I want to write more about music. And it all sort of grew that way. And it was a really positive experience. And I'm grateful because, you know, I knew what I was up against quite early on. You know, I knew what it was like in the Radio 1 studios. I knew the building, I knew the people, and it was really helpful. But I think at the time I was just not ready and impatient.
Zach had a very clear plan for what his future should look like as well. He decided against studying and instead went straight into practice. He showed his first collection after school in Lagos, Nigeria. Pretty crazy. But Zach is a realist and knows that he has to make a name for himself first. And so he has worked for many great designers in recent years.
The intention was to learn from the greats, you know, because this, you know, talent will only take you this far, you know, the rest is hard work. To be credible in the industry, you have to attach your name to those brands so people can see there's some kind of value in this guy who didn't go to university, you know? So like, I'm thinking to myself, when someone's like, okay, so you make clothing, right? You're a designer, right? And it's like, yeah, okay, well, tell me something I know. It's like, okay, well, do you know my latest collection? No. Do you know this? No. You know, no. Do you know Mani? Yes. Okay. You know? Like, okay, but even if they don't know Mani, okay, do you know O32C? It's like, oh, yes, I do. Okay. Well, you know, I also was there. Do you know Numero Berlin? Yes. Oh, well, I also was there. You know, do you know Botta? It's like, oh, yes, I do. Okay. Well, now you can start taking me serious, you know, because like, you know, we live in this world where people pretend like, you know, everyone's opinions count, but they actually don't. You know, the people will only believe you once you have things in connected to your name, which they know.
Dropping buzzwords at some point.
Exactly. You know, so I thought to myself, okay, that's the strategy. You know, I'm going to go to Milan to go to Mani here, work with Francesco Ruzzo, Lawrence Steele, get those two names connected with my name. Okay. Then came the Dia Prada post. So, okay, now, so with Punk Zec, you have Francesco Ruzzo, Lawrence Steele, Virgil Abloh. Then I go to Berlin. Okay. I work with Jörg Koch and all that kind of stuff, you know, and Maria Koch. And now, we also went with worked together with That's Offergeld and all that kind of crazy stuff, you know. And then I went to Paris and I worked with Lizzie Herrenberg and Rashimi Botta, you know. So those names aren't connected with my name, you know, and that gives me more credibility to my next project or employer or whoever. I was working in Paris and I felt like I was just taking off and working at this new place and everything. And it was pretty tight. It's pretty good, you know. It's pretty delicious. And I'm like in Paris, I'm like living my life. And all of a sudden I finish work at 7:30. I got to be home by 8 o'clock because it's a lockdown. I was like, what the fuck is this? I mean, so that kind of sucked. And then like, I think like a month later or so, they quit my contract and I lost my job in Paris. And I was like a kick in the nuts because I was like, fuck, I worked for the last 3 years, I worked so hard to get to Paris.
And now you kicked off. You know? Yeah.
So I didn't want to directly go to Paris. Yeah, I wanted to go to Milan. I wanted to go to Berlin. And then I wanted to go to Paris. And then I worked for the last 3 years. I worked my ass off to get to Paris. And I'm there for 2 months. And then they kicked me out. And I was like, fuck.
And not because of your work, because of the crisis. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I worked so many nights for free. You know, I like worked 12-hour days and all that kind of stuff. And I lost so many friends because of that shit, you know. And like troubled relationships because I was like, I was working and shit. And then I make it to where I'm going. And then all of a sudden they're like, dude, bye. You know? And shit. I was like, yeah. So hurt. I was like, fuck. And then I went back to Cologne, back to where I started, you know, and I was sitting like in my children's room. And I was like, you know, I'm sure I'm happy to see my brothers and my family, and all that kind of stuff. And I was sitting there. And then after like the first month, it's like 4 a.m, I just sit on my bed and I was just like crying because I was like, what the fuck, you know, because it was like all for nothing kind of, you know, and that really sucked so bad, you know, and then all of a sudden came this amazing opportunity that I could go to Lagos, you know. So I saw this, my mom sent me this post. My mom always sends me posts on Instagram. she sent me this, you should join here, you should join there, blah, blah, blah. And she said, you should join this. And I read it and I was like, Arise Fashion Week, Lagos, Nigeria. And I was like, oh, sounds pretty nice, you know. And I took part in it 3 years ago. I was like, yeah, fuck it, I'll give it another shot. I applied there and then they accepted me. And then I made the collection. And then I flew to Lagos, presented a collection, and I was back in the game again. And I was like, oh my God, this is pretty nice. You know, like you only need one shot to get out of it, you know? So yeah, the pandemic kind of affects all of us. And I try to stay optimistic because like it's all a mind game.
Katie, Jaguar, and Zach work in the jobs they have always wanted to work in. They pursued their passion. So I wanted to know from them kind of advice they could share with those who are not sure about what they want to do and in which direction they should go professionally.
You know, just go if there's something you're really interested in, or even if you're just a tiny bit curious and you want to try something out, I would say go for it. Like, that's what I did with radio. And honestly, if I hadn't followed that curiosity and wasn't brave that one time and walked into the student radio station and said hello and didn't know anyone, I wouldn't be here now. I honestly don't know what I'd be doing right now, which is crazy. So, you know, if you have any passion or any little niggling thing like, oh, I'd like to do that, like, don't worry about anyone else thinks. Just go for it, because it could be the best thing you ever do.
And also, self-confidence is the only thing you have in life, you know? Like, you got to be confident even if you're making, like, pasta.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you cook for someone, you got to be confident enough that that person's going to like it. So kind of, like, confidence is the only thing you have, you know? So even if you wake up in the morning and you put on an outfit to go to to meet a really nice girl or boy, or go to like a parent-teacher talk, or go to a job interview, like that outfit you put on is only as good as the confidence that is within you to get what you're trying to get.
Well, that's a powerful ending. I hope these three conversations were as inspiring to you as they were for me. Katie, Jaguar, and Zach are good examples of how we can turn our passion into a profession. And at the end of the day, I think the most important thing is to really trust in yourself. If you have feedback, we are more than happy to receive your direct messages on Instagram or leave us a comment on Apple. Until then, let's hopefully meet on the dance floor soon.
Das war der Telekom Electronic Beats Podcast.
Abonniert den Podcast bei Apple, SoundCloud, Spotify oder Deezer.
Wir sehen uns im Club.
Bis dann.